Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is Paul Nichols, the investor coach, pulling back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposing the truth about money and investing. Hey, I hope this finds you well this beginning of April in 2016. I have a market update and a couple thoughts I'd like to share with you. It's been a while since I've been on here, beginning of February, end of January. Busy. And, you know, the market has been el wacko the last couple of years. But if you understand the basics of investing and realize it is a long-term endeavor, lifelong that is, we are able to capitalize on some of the craziness that's happened over the last 10 quarters, basically. You know, there's only three rules to prudent investing. That's own equities, diversify, and rebalance. Own equities, diversify, rebalance. Now, when you own equities, in that statement is quite a bit of content, because owning equities implies that you are going after things with an objective in mind. When you look at the academic approach, the scientific approach, the actual empirical studies and the reality of the last 50 years of research, it's pretty clear that three rules of investing have been identified and widely accepted: own equities, rebalance, diversify. Now, the challenge, though, is what does it mean to own equities? Well, we need to understand that there are risk premiums by being invested in the market. Not all risk is created equal. Once one identifies those risk premiums, they can utilize them to their advantage by understanding the concept of dissimilar price movement, that you want to own umbrellas and you want to own suntan lotion. You never know which area is going to be up at a certain time or what's going to be happening at a certain time, but you'll capture it. This is some of the science. It dictates that by taking two risky companies or areas and combining them, you can actually level out the risk with a certain amount of return. So you get whatever's up. And this is the concept and the general nucleus of why, idea of why we want to do the market update on a regular basis. Now, this would be a market update up till April 4th, 2016. So we're just finishing up the first quarter of this year. And what we see here is not too unlike what we've seen the last couple of years for 2014 and 15. And here's a quick recap. Let's just do a recap of the last couple of years heading into 2016. Well, let's look at 2015. We'll look at the last four quarters. So when we look at March of 2012, we start to see the market being up across the board. When we get to June, the middle of 2015, did I say 2012 earlier? I meant 2015, first quarter 2015, March 31st, what we see is predominantly the market is up across the board, especially in small international. When we go to June 30th of 2015, the second quarter, we find the market as a whole has pretty much dropped off in all the areas. It's gone down, especially in emerging markets, small and large across the board emerging markets. When we go to the last quarter of last year, about three months ago roughly, we see a situation where we see a little bit of U.S. up, U.S. large primarily, a little bit of U.S. small, just U.S. large, and then internationally it's still continues to be down. We saw a similar scenario in 2014, except what we saw was U.S. large being up. U.S. large has been up the last few years. This is after a decade where it was down for 10 years. The pundits and those of opinion, this is just what it is, opinion, would say that that's due to the fact that the government has kept interest rates so low, printed an awful lot of money, whereby large companies have been able to take advantage of that through borrowing money at a lower rate, buying back higher interest rated bonds that they had issued before, or buying their own stock back, making their companies more streamlined, which is what happened after 2008, a lot of layoffs and the credit bubble. And now you got a lot of these large, especially large, mega large U.S. companies that are just hugely fat with cash, because U.S. large has been up the last couple of years. Now, hopefully you've been rebalancing your 401k and your other accounts, understanding that when it's up, when it's green is when you sell it. That's when you take the gains off, keep some of what you have, but take the gains off and put it in the other areas, red. which are down, of course, and those of the last couple of years have been predominantly emerging markets. So the last couple of years in a well-diversified portfolio, what we've seen, that's one that tries to capture a global market return, the one that does not chase the social, political, economic climate and the news to dictate how that portfolio is built, but simply sticks to the tenets of investing, which is where the risk premiums are, own equities, diversify, rebalance. So the last couple of years, we've seen basically U.S. growth that has then been poured through prudence, and sometimes prudence is difficult, especially when everyone's going one way and you're going the other way. And by that I mean selling U.S. As these gains have come in the last couple of years and spread it out over the other areas of the portfolio that may be level or down, most of those being emerging international markets, as well as some developed. All that comes to where we are April 4th, 2016. Let's start with international this time, and it's negative. So, once again, continue to rebalance into it. When we look at the Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index, we see basically a negative 4.2%. This would be predominantly developed countries like, in fact, it is developed countries like Australia, Austria, Belgium, Denmark, France, Portugal, United Kingdom, etc. Negative 4.2% as of April 4th, 2016. When we go into the Morgan Stanley Emerging Markets Index, that would be emerging markets, countries like Argentina, Chile, China, Colombia, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Africa, Taiwan, etc. Negative 3% roughly as of April 4th, 2016. And when we get into the Morgan Stanley Capital International, Europe, Australia, and the Far East, what we basically have is a negative 5%. That would be all of international, excluding U.S. and Canada. So international has been down, and prudence dictates that rebalancing is required on a scheduled basis. And so money should be put into the international marketplace. In the last couple of years, it gets tougher and tougher to do it. But it's the right thing to do. You take the gains where they are and you rebalance. The market overall goes up and continues to go up. It always has. Hit new highs. It always will. Unless some global extinction event happens. And people say to me, well, Paul, how can you have so much confidence when you make a statement like that it always will? The market will always go up. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we got to ask ourselves, what is the market? In very simple terms, and I like to speak in simple terms, the market is a collective result of you and I and all the people that we know getting up and going to do what they do in a given day. That is to do their jobs, to create, to produce, to innovate, to harness a productivity. And basically that is the result of all our efforts by getting up and going to work every day, because self-preservation drives us to do that because we're hungry. That productivity is harnessed in the market, and someone will always be able to harness that. And for those people that have some sight and some understanding, they'll be able to say, look, I want to get a piece of that as well. And that's simply the market. So, you know, when you look at all the shows and you watch the different TV shows and you read all the magazines, my goodness, I've done it for years. It does nothing but confuse one. There's very little clarity offered there. There's an awful lot of opinion. We do not have a lack of information in this country. We have a very clear lack of direction in a number of different areas. And when we talk about financial literacy, the country is failing miserably in that area. Very few people understand concepts and basic economics when it comes to understanding money. So we need to realize that the market's always going to be around. So let's go into the U.S. I'm getting all fired up over here today, man. It's just oozing out of me today. The picture's clear long-term. Long-term, whatever situation we're dealing with the market the last few years, this too shall pass. Internet, U.S., though, not too bad, really. I mean, you know, it's nothing to write home about, but as of April 4th, 2016, the S&P 500 index is about 1% up, That's predominantly 500 U.S. large companies. The Russell 2000 value, which measures small companies, is about a 0.5% up. The Russell 1000 value index, that measures large cap, is 1.5% up. The Russell 2000 small growth is down 2%. And the Russell 2500 small to mid-sized companies are down as well. So the bright spots are really large. Hello, what's new? You know, I believe, and this is Paul's opinion, you're welcome to it, is propped up by the Fed and many countries, Europe, the bank system as well. But what I do believe this reflects is a lack of really economic growth that we're having all over the world. I don't understand that other than just the regulatory nature that a lot of businesses find themselves in has created hesitancy for them to invest capital, whether it be government policies, regulatory policies, taxes, or whatever. Which brings me to another subject I want to talk about today, which is the Roth account. You know, you only have a few days left, folks, to fund your Roth accounts for April 15th for the previous year, 2015. Now, some of you may not understand the importance of this. Some of you may look at it a little more cavalierly. I would look at it very, very seriously, because that is the number one account that we fund personally every year, the Roth account, because I believe in the seed versus the harvest. That is, if you were a farmer, would you rather have the opportunity to pay tax on the seed, understanding you will get a tax-free harvest? Or would you rather get a tax break on the seed and pay tax on the harvest? Well, most people, when I ask in those simple terms, would you, as a farmer, rather play tax on the seed, or would you rather get a tax break on the seed? Most people say, I'd rather have a tax-free harvest. But the 401ks and the 403bs and the 457s and the traditional IRAs and the simple IRAs and the SEP IRAs and the deferred compensation and all the variances of IRS-qualified plans that give you a tax deduction then require that you pay tax on the harvest. Now, the idea and the concept is that you'll be in a lower tax bracket after retirement. In my personal planning practice of several hundred clients, we have not experienced that to happen very often. Most people earn in the same tax bracket they retire in. So the tax deferral may or may not have been beneficial, because we don't know what happens until people pull money out of these deferred accounts, these qualified IRA type accounts, as to what the tax calculation would be. See, when you defer taxes, ladies and gentlemen, you're deferring taxes, that's the obvious, and getting a break now. What we don't realize often, the unintended consequences, is we're also deferring the tax calculation. Now, if we happen to be in a lower tax bracket, that's wonderful, then it may have paid off. But I find that rarely to happen, especially of those people that are fairly good stewards, do the best they can to save through the years, and have some accounts to pull from into retirement for security, lifestyle, and other means and other reasons. So one would have to ask himself, do you believe there's tax that it's better to pay tax on the seed or the harvest? Now, some might say, well, Paul, I'm definitely going to be in a lower tax bracket. If I'm in the 39% tax bracket and I'm going to retire in the 25% marginal bracket, then deferral would have made sense for me. Well, we would know for sure during the tax calculation. So the next question one has to ask himself is, do you believe that tax rates are going to be lower in the future, the same in the future, or higher in the future? When I ask the question in the classes and the universities that we do different training events at, what we find is it's a rare hand that's raised that they believe tax rates will be lower in the future, but rather they believe, and this is a vast majority of Americans, that tax rates will be higher in the future. So until the tax calculation happens, we don't know whether your tax rate, tax deferral, made sense for you or not. When we factor in, though, the sheer debt that we're carrying, and I don't mean the $16, $17 trillion you hear about on the news, I mean the actual $105, $115 trillion, I think it was $106 trillion last time I read the Congressional Budget Office's report. When you consider unfunded liabilities, ladies and gentlemen, see, those aren't figured in our debt. Unfunded liabilities would be Medicare and Social Security. Why aren't they unfunded? Boy, that's a whole other question we all should be asking, huh? But the reality is they're not. And so we have $105 trillion deficit. So when you start looking at that, and you start realizing that our debt load, not our deficit, but our overall debt in this country, would require right now every single American to pay in excess of $800,000, and we would still not satisfy the debt. So the likelihood that tax rates are going to go up in the future, most Americans believe, is a good chance it'll happen. At least that's the poll of thousands of people in asking the question through having someone raise their hand. So the question is, do you believe they'll be lower, the same, or higher in the future? And almost all the hands go up when I ask the question higher. So with that being said, all that was to make the fervent point that funding a Roth is a lost opportunity if you don't do it each year. If you don't fund that Roth every year, you cannot get that year back. You can't get that year where they give you the opportunity to take $5,500 or $6,500 and put it in a tax-free account, ladies and gentlemen, to go ahead and pay tax on that seed, because that's going to be a tax harvest down the road. So in my fervent opinion, one that looks at an awful lot of tax planning, creative tax planning, wealth management, and strategies to help people that are good stewards keep more of their money, because by paying less of a tax rate down the road, you have more net spendable income. The Roth, to me, is the best thing the government's ever come up with, one of the few things that I believe the government's ever come up with that really do benefit the American investor. Most of the other ones create much more tax revenue for the government. When you start to look at the tax on the harvest of a lot of these people that have deferred large accounts. So if you have a whatever your IRA, 401k, 403b, whatever that account is, all those qualified accounts turn into an IRA when you retire, you have a permanent tax lien on them. You know, if you liquidated it right now, what would it be in your marginal tax bracket? 15%, 25%, 33%. So Roth, fund it. You should go wherever you need to go to just get one open as soon as you can. Even if you just put it in cash, you can figure out how to invest it prudently later. Let me finish up with one item, and that is fees. I've been seeing all these commercials, which is interesting. I've always looked mainstream commercials, sporting events and different things. You know, you see the mainstream commercials and you see the larger companies and you see what they're spending hundreds of millions and sometimes billions of dollars with advertising on. And often those perceptions that they create drive a lot of the social and sometimes political and economic trends that we see in America. I believe marketing works. Frequency builds response. There's a reason that McDonald's, for example, continues to have commercials. I mean, my goodness, who doesn't know about what a Big Mac is, or, you know, a French fry, you know, Egg McMuffin. But the reality is that marketing works. And what I see is a lot of the mainstream companies that are trying to, in my opinion, do an intentional, a direct, intentional, planned, manipulative misdirect of perception from performance, growth, results, and returns to fees. They're giving the American public the perception that fees is what they should be focusing on, and that any of the advisors involved in the process must add layers of cost to the process as a whole, when in reality, it's getting access to some type of electronic account that you can trade easily based on news and all kinds of glitzy reports and different things that promote the three rules against prudent investing, which would be market timing, stock picking, and track record investing. We've worked with psychologists. We've worked with a number of folks, academics in all different areas of finance, and we realize we're hardwired to gamble. We're hardwired to want to try to pain and pleasure, you know, the carrot and the stick. I was with Terrence O'Dean, PhD, Berkeley, Cal Berkeley, in the area of financial psychology. And he shared with the group of us his input and analysis of a few commercials that were playing on mainstream TV to promote people to get brokerage accounts and to start these different type of low-cost accessibility to the market type of accounts. And it was interesting how many subliminal messages were in there about gaining control, when it actually, what happens is we're hardwired to take risk. We're hardwired to trade. And when I looked at a number of the studies that he had produced through the years, especially in the Asian communities where they did most of the studies over in the Far East, they found when there was accessibility to trading through the computer, that trading went up dramatically. In fact, the hours, in fact, it started to get into a 24-hour cycle where people would study these things, really believing that stock picking, market timing, and track record investing work, when there's no empirical science or studies to prove it whatsoever. That the market return is what all of us get in any given year, minus what it costs to invest. So what does all that mean, Paul? Well, what that means then is, if we have more accessibility and we don't have any prudent layers to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, that's not prudent what you're doing. Continuing to stock pick, market time, track record, invest is nothing short of gambling. The perception is, what they're doing is, by cutting out some of the fiduciary advisors, especially fiduciary advisors, and the fee involved, they actually end up with more return. But the reality is, we see a lot more trading because they're enabling the bad behavior. See, most people don't have an investing problem. They got a mental problem. That may not sound very good, but what I mean by that is that it's not the tenets and the understanding of how to invest prudently. It's the emotion that drives us. It's the money demons. And most of the mistakes that people make, and most of the money that they inadvertently transfer, and most of the money that is a result of unintended consequences that they lose, most people will lose more money in interest and how they pay taxes than they ever accrue in their total retirement accounts by not understanding some of these rules. And what happens is, when the market goes down, they start to sell and freak out. And when the market goes up, they start to take that lower account now because they realize losses and go try to chase the market again. And it's a vicious cycle that doesn't work. So what I'm trying to share with you is, the perception out there is that, hey, we have access, low cost, you can do what you're doing, you don't need these advisors involved in this situation, when in reality, what happens is, it just enables bad emotional behavior with the most prudent, level-minded of souls. It amazes me how stupid money makes each of us when we look at our emotional, personal situation. You know, it's hard for me to be biased with my situation. It's hard for me to look at my family situation and look at it totally objectively. There's some emotion involved. But I have the benefit of seeing hundreds and having thousands of conversations with people and not being emotionally involved. And there's obvious trends that you see. And most of us, left to our own devices, just don't do the most prudent and wise things for us long term. So let me shut up, I guess. I'm 20 plus minutes into my conversation with you today. I hope this finds you well. I hope you've been enriched by a nugget or two. The market's a little wacky, but you got to stay in it. You got to keep rebalancing. You got to diversify and get a global structured portfolio and quit chasing the market. But you got to start with a good portfolio that has a global portfolio. You need to have set times when you rebalance it. If you need to learn more about this stuff, FAICoach.com. Check out the website. And with that, this is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, President of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisory firm located in State College, Pennsylvania, signing off and wishing you a wonderful day. Hope this finds you well, and hope you have a pleasant and wonderful month. Until I talk to you next time.